Proverbs chapter 5, that's where we're going to be this evening. We're going to look at the entirety of Proverbs chapter 5. As you read through Proverbs chapter 5, it becomes very apparent what Solomon is referring to here. But we start off with he is going to call to his son, is what he calls him. But this is something that we see all over the book of Proverbs, is he's going to say, give attention to what I'm going to tell you. This is something that's all over the book of Proverbs. He starts it again in chapter 6. My son, chapter 7, my son, keep my words and treasure my commandments with you. But he wants us to pay attention to what it is that he's saying. And I think at first, you might think that we're actually speaking a little bit proverbially. But as we read through, you'll realize that that Solomon is actually speaking very directly here. And what we're going to see is that first he's talking about marriage, but what I want us to look at, and I'm gonna spoil the ending for myself here, but marriage, the church, and being content. And we'll see that contentedness very quickly at the start. So if you'll look with me here at chapter 5, verses 1 and 2 first. My son, give attention to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, that you may observe discretion and your lips may reserve knowledge. Okay, so he's asking us to pay attention, and not just to pay attention, but to understand that we are being given a piece of wisdom. There's this idea here of discretion and the reservation of knowledge. I find that interesting that your lips may reserve knowledge considering what we're going to talk about. But he goes from may your lips reserve knowledge to verse 3. We're going to read verses 3 through 6 now. For the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, and her steps take hold of Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways are unstable. She does not know it. And so he's going to point out that when all you're focused on is what you want, you're going to find yourself at the end of a path you never wanted to go down in the first place. And I love the end of verse 6 here, though. Her ways are unstable. She does not know it. So often we find ourselves at the end of a path we have put ourselves down, and then we realize, I'm here. Of all places, I've come here. I never expected to be at this place in my life, except you walk down that path one step at a time. And so little do we ever realize that that is in fact the path that we're on. A path that feels like it's climbing and climbing and climbing, but instead it's actually going further and further down. And notice here that the word bittersweet doesn't quite meet the idea here, does it? It's more of a sweet bitter, right? At first, you think it's all nice and sweet. But it very quickly will turn into your own downfall. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood. And as I've grown up and I've been in different churches, I have seen this literally play out. Particularly with men. I've seen this play out. And you know what I always hear? I don't know how it got that far. Well, sorry, you got that far by taking it one step at a time. And we have to keep our eyes open. And this is what he mentioned by give attention to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding. You won't see it coming from a mile away. But I do. I can tell you what exactly is going to happen. So carnality ends up being our downfall. We want something that's not ours to have. And then move down into verse 7. 7 through 11. Now then, my sons, listen to me and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house, or you will give your vigor to others and your years to the cruel one. Strangers will be filled with your strength, and your hard-earned goods will go to the house of an alien, and you groan at your final end when your flesh and your body are consumed. A very, very graphic look there. But this is something that I've never quite understood, and I've seen this play out a lot as well, is that men and women will get involved in adulterous relationships, they'll divorce their spouse, and they'll marry the other person. And then look at what's happened as we go down that road. Look at how much plays out exactly the way Solomon said it. Your life goes to those who did not take part in it in the first place. Verse 8 reminds me a lot of Joseph. Keep your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house. Don't even tempt it. As soon as Potiphar's wife laid hold of Joseph, it says he left his coat behind and ran. If you don't even give an occasion for something to happen, then it can't ever happen in the first place. But hopefully you're noticing, as we go through this, what the title of the sermon was. Marriage, the church, and contentment. Just keep that in your mind. But notice that he gives the warning. And so then here in verses 7 through 11, he says, well, here's what you do. And here's why you do it. You're going to find yourself at the end, and all that's left to you is the groaning of your death. And then verses 12 through 14. And you say, how I have hated instruction, and my heart spurned reproof. I have not listened to the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to my instructors. I was almost in utter ruin in the midst of the assembly and congregation. Look at what Solomon says. Now here you say, woe is me. No, the time for woe is me has long passed. You have found yourself at the end, and all that's left is the realization of what's happened. You have not listened to the advice and wisdom of those who have come before you. And then he leads into 15. That Ethan read for us. Drink water from your own cistern and fresh water from your own well. Should your springs be dispersed abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be yours alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breasts satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love. For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner? Notice the call here. You already have what you're wanting. As he starts off here in verse 15, you already have water. You have a cistern. You have a well. Something that is yours and yours alone. It is already yours. But what, you must have someone else's cistern as well? And of course, here I think back to the words of Nathan. And I wonder how much Solomon was inspired by his father's story. There was a man with one lamb that he loved with all of his heart. You had to come and take that lamb and sacrifice it. Drink from your own cistern. You already have what you want. Why look for it elsewhere? As we say, the pasture is always greener on the other side until you get there, right? It's always greener on the other side until you get there. But then notice how Solomon switches it right here in the last three verses. For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all his paths. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. He will die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he will go astray. Whose fault is it? Is it God's? Is it God's fault you're in the position that you're in? No. You didn't listen to the words of God. God is watching, and God is instructing you on the path that you should walk. And here's where, as I was reading through this proverb, these sets of proverbs, I thought this is exactly what God is expecting from us as his people as well. He calls the church his bride, the bride of Christ. And the connection between husbands and wives and Christ and the church is evident. You'll mostly find it in Ephesians chapter 5, but there's more places than that in the New Testament. Colossians chapter 3 is another place that we can go to. But this connection is unmistakable. And in fact, when we look at the prophet Hosea, God has a lot to say about this topic in Hosea as well. That God looks at the relationship that he has with us as someone who is married. God is one who follows his own wisdom. He drinks from his own cistern. He doesn't give that to anyone else. You know what the problem is? We don't do the same in return. When you go back and when you reread Proverbs 5, the adulteress now is your sin. It seems as though there is the dripping of honey, and smoother than oil are the lips that are telling you what you want to hear. Well, God doesn't care about that. Or is God really going to be upset with a few seconds or minutes of what you want? But notice that as we go further and further into our sin, we have walked every step of the way down that path, and then Satan pulls back the curtain, and we go, how did I get here? One step at a time. What is it that James tells us? We're carried away when we're enticed by our own lust. And when that is conceived, it brings forth sin. And when sin is realized, then it brings forth death. The two-edged sword. The two-edged sword is an important image for ancient peoples at this time. There's actually a few cultures here that use this double-edged sword or the two-edged sword. It pierced better than anything. It could drive in faster. A one-edged sword is made for slicing. A two-edged sword is made for stabbing. And what these cultures learned very quickly is that a stab wound anywhere on the body, 3 inches or more, anywhere, is fatal. I could slash at someone all day and they might survive. But I take my two-edged sword and I stab you just a little bit, I can always find my mark. And that's the way sin is. It will always find its mark. And it doesn't matter where it pierces you, it just has to pierce you enough. And so now when he says, her feet go down to death and her steps take hold of Sheol, there's nothing waiting for you except being lost from God. And now look then in verses 7 through 11. Really, 8, verse 8 through 11. Keep your way far from sin. And do not go near the door of sin's house. Or will you give your soul to others and your eternity to the cruel one? And strangers will be filled with your spirit, and your hard-earned righteousness will go to the house of the wicked. And you will groan at your final end when your flesh and your body are consumed in hell. So what is verse 15 telling us here? Be content. Be content with what you have. So easily we look at what we want and we wonder why we don't have it. Is it because it's actually not in your possession, or is it because you're looking in the wrong place? Have you ever lost something and you know it's in your house somewhere? And you keep looking and you're never looking in the right place. And then you look at the one place it's not supposed to be and there it is. You ever been there? Sometimes that's what we do. We have misplaced what God has given us. We've put it where it doesn't belong. And then we wonder why we can't find it when we're looking for it. Instead of putting it in a place of prominence, in the place that I always keep it, the place where I will remember where it lay. But that's not what we do. I want that one little bit that God is not giving me, or we perceive that God's not giving it to us. Because God gives us everything we could need. We already have what we want. We have life. We have eternal life. And what do we give it up for? Something that we weren't supposed to have in the beginning. If we were supposed to have it, God would have given it to us. Sometimes what we need to do is we need to reframe things in our mind. That means I take something and the way that I already think about it now, and I change it into something that will be impactful to me. Do you think of your sin as cheating on your spouse? I'm sure if I said, who wants to cheat on their spouse, I'm not going to get any hands. And yet, you might, as soon as you get home, give up what the Lord has given you for just a few minutes of what you want. We talked this morning about Mount Sinai and Mount Zion. They had God sitting on the top of a mountain telling Moses everything they needed to know. And what did they do? Well, he's been up there for a while. Maybe he's dead. You know what? I know that God's right there, but man, I think we need a golden calf or something. We need something tangible. We need something that we can worship. Let alone turning toward the mountain and worshiping the God that's sitting right there. Forget that. Let's build a calf, something that we know what it looks like. They have God sitting right on top of the mountain. But no, I have to make this over here. And then what happens? Moses comes down, sees what's going on, the revelry happening. It says they grind up the calf, put it in the water, and make everyone drink it. All of that pleasure has to be washed down with the waters of reality. That thing that you gave up, the eternal life that God has offered you for, it's going to be ground up and put in the water of your reality. Are you prepared to drink it? But if you drink from your own cistern, that water is not contaminated. That water doesn't have the taste of your failure in it. Because God has put that away from you. You already have what you want. You have pleasure. You have peace. You have life. You have joy. You can be content. Who out there gets to be content? They're always wondering whether or not their life has purpose. Where's the next bit of their junky fix of sin? That's what they're concerned about. That's not your place to be concerned about. God has given you blessings. God has given you Himself of all things. Don't put that aside and think that that's not as important as what we already have. Don't think of that as not as important as what you want. Don't do that. Drink from your own cistern. And this is why this concept of marriage is so important to God, to communicate. Right? As soon as He makes mankind, what does He do? He establishes marriage. He wanted Adam and Eve and the rest of us who come after to understand not just the relationship that Adam and Eve and the rest of us were supposed to have, but the relationship that we're supposed to have with God. Why do I want to give up God for something else? Paul, when he's talking about eating meat sacrificed to idols, he says, I know that there are no other gods. I know that no other gods exist. And there's this hidden question in what Paul said, which is, why are you bothering to worship something that doesn't exist in the first place? This happiness, this joy that you're striving for, once you seize it, what is it? It's nothing. It leaves you empty, usually emptier than where you started. Again, it makes me think of Jesus with the Samaritan woman at the well. He says, when you drink of this water, you will thirst again. But the waters that I give you, you will become a wellspring of life eternal. When we drink of the waters of life that God has given us, we will have all of the water, all of the sustenance that we will ever need. But people look at what's right in front of them. And they want that instead of what God has so graciously given them. They've put on the blinders here and they can't see the rest of the world around them. Don't make that mistake. God is watching. I always like to tell people, that is not meant to be a terrifying thing for us. The fact that God is watching over His children, that should be a comforting thought to us. We should be thankful that there is a God watching, knowing what's going on in our lives. He is not unaware of what's happening to us. He is always watching. You know who should be terrified that God is watching? Those who are not His children. They should be terrified. But you, you're doing what the Lord has asked you to do. What is there to be afraid of? What is there to hide? What is there to run away from? And let's go back and think about this adultery point that Solomon makes for a moment. What all do you have to hide from your spouse if you're being faithful? One of the things that I see often is people saying that they want a relationship where they can give their significant other the password to their phone. My wife knows all my passwords. What have I to hide? What have I to keep secret? Should I keep it secret that I love my wife? Should I keep it secret that she gives me the sustenance that I need, that she has been a blessing from God? Is that something that I should hide? Or should I be thankful for it? When you go home, when you are faced with a moment of, I'm about to give in to my sin, would you ever do that to your significant other? And if you wouldn't dare, then why are you about to do it to God? The song we're about to sing is Jesus is calling. In fact, I want to point you to the first four words, actually, because it's Jesus is tenderly calling thee home. So often when we see these moments of spouses finding out that their spouse is cheating, there's a lot of yelling, usually. Perhaps there's some throwing of things. Perhaps there is some chasing of the other person out of the house. All understandable. Jesus looks at us do that, and he tenderly calls out to us. It's the beautiful thing about the book of Hosea, if you've never read it. Here is the prophet Hosea told to go and marry a prostitute named Gomer. And God tells him she is going to leave you. She's going to leave you and go back to her ways. And when she does, God tells Hosea, now is not the time to be sad. Now is the time to go and get her back. Go and get her back. That's exactly what God does to us. This is exactly what God does for us. He reaches out his hand and asks us to come back. His love for us is unmatched. His love for us is unconditional. As long as we turn back and look for him, he's standing there with his hand outstretched. And tonight, that hand is stretched toward you. Will you come back? If you find yourself struggling with sin, you're living in an adulterous relationship. You're living in a relationship where you are committing adultery against your God. Come and make it right. He will accept you back into the union. Please come forward and take advantage of this opportunity as we stand and as we sing.
Jesus is tenderly calling me.